Les colloques du Collège de France.
Good morning everyone. It's a great pleasure to open this conference and I would like to thank Didier Fassin for inviting me to chair the first panel. This morning we'll have the opportunity to listen to four distinguished scholars in the field of settler colonialism and colonial violence. Since the ceasefire was signed 2 months ago, the level of daily massacres in the Gaza Strip has decreased, but the genocide has not stopped. The agreement has not led to the entry of humanitarian aid or the opening of the Rafah crossing on both sides, showing that Israel has not abandoned its plans for transfer. On the contrary, the colonial power seems to have adjusted its management of the conflict by imposing new realities on the ground, including occupation, whether direct or under external control. The very essence of the security and economic administration project for the Gaza future should be understood as part of a continuing effort to erase the Palestinians as political actors and deprive them of their right to choose their own destiny. The dispossession of the Palestinian land is also being slowly achieved in the West Bank. How can we understand the mechanism of the ongoing genocide? What distinguishes it from other genocide? What are the pitfalls for researchers writing about the genocide of the Palestinians? These are a few questions that the four speakers will tackle, each of them addressing the issue of genocide through a different approach. Nadira Shalhoub Kevorkian looks at criminal crime through a micro approach, focusing on personal trajectories and everyday narratives. Nadira is a professor extraordinaire at the University of South Africa, professor and global chair in law at Queen Mary University of London, and professor emerita at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. Her research topic focuses on settler colonial state brutality and unchilding, securitized and sacralized politics, state crime, global feminist politics, and epistemic violence. She is the author of Militarization and Violence Against Women in Conflict Zone in the Middle East, the Palestinian Case Study in 2010, Incarcerated Childhoods and the Politics of Unchilding, 2019. And she also co-edited Abolitionism, Settler Colonialism, and State Crime in 2024. Nadira, the title of your presentation today is Revolutionary Livability Amidst an Embodied Genocide. You have the floor for 30 minutes.
Good morning. And thank you, Leila, for your introduction. I will be talking about fragmented wholeness and in defiance of Ashla, trying to bring to the forefront, really, my recent work on the unfolding efforts to theorize the role of Ashla, the scattered body remains, in apprehending Palestinian overkill in the context of ongoing genocide in Gaza. I approach Ashla not simply as evidence of violence, but as an analytic lens through which to examine the political work and effective economies of genocidal destruction, as well as the intimate entanglement of body and land, past and present, the living and the dead, the fragmented and the whole. I begin with the voice of Hayat, 21-year-old young woman speaking from within the displacement, and I quote, "I could not calm down, not until I gathered my children ashla, collected them, lemlemtum, and found them in a place on our land to bury them with respect. I visited them, reassured that even if they are, the Israelis tore them apart, scattered their remains, their memory, their love, they remain a whole. Kian Kamel Eli, in my heart, even though they have been torn like our land in Palestine, they are my whole. Hinni Kiani." Like so many in Gaza, Hayat rushed in pain and disbelief to gather and embrace the ashla, the limbs and body parts of loved ones subjected to unimaginable violence. Her question echoes across Gaza. Why? Why have our loved ones been turned into ashla? Why were they killed in their homes, their schools, their hospitals? Why does a settler colonial state burn families alive, cut bodies apart, and dismember them before our eyes? Why this urge to fragment body and land? Why this overkill? In my conversations with my family, students, and comrades in Gaza, I find myself returning again and again to the same question. What makes the Palestinian body such an object of colonial anxiety? Why does its wholeness so deeply unsettle the settlers? Is there a psychic need to destroy, to eviscerate, to reaffirm colonial normativity by making overkill not only permissible, but necessary? To kill beyond necessity, openly define international law, and to do so with impunity has become a new performance of sovereign power. This logic aligns with the analysis of UN rapporteur Francesca Albanese in her report From Economy of Occupation to Economy of Genocide, where she demonstrates how genocide persists because it is capital, economically profitable, sustained by networks of corporations, financiers, and institutions that monetize Palestinian death and dispossession. And what I want to say that it's not only that it is a capital, in a global, but the flesh, the body, the dismembered ashla are a capital. In his latest piece in Counterpunch on December 12th, Jeffrey Sinclair stated, and I quote, "The bodies were deeply buried under the dirt, debris and garbage. Some were elderly, some young. Some showed signs of being shot at close range. The bodies from earlier mass grave site at the Shifa Nasser Hospital had evidence that the victims' hands had been bound. Some showed signs of being shot at close range. Several had bullet holes in the skull. The bodies from earlier mass grave site at Ashifa had evidence that the victim's hands had been bound. The horrors of Gaza continues to unfold in ever more depraved chapter." End of quote. So overkill then is not simply access, it's an inscription. It marks the colonial calculus of who counts as human and who does not. Rima Hamami's formulation of body that count is instructive here. Settler colonial governance operates through differential gravability, producing hierarchies of values in which Palestinian bodies occupy a zone of permanent precarity, rendered vulnerable, disposable, and already marked for elimination. This logic allows the settler to declare without shame or hesitation that even a three-year-old is a threat, or that entire neighborhood must be neutralized. Such statements are not aberrations, but structural articulations of the political order that manufactures bodies whose destruction can be justified, rationalized, and I would say demanded. So this geocorpography of overkilling exceeds the local. It becomes global precisely because the technologies of erasure, the logic of expandability, and the cycles of colonial destructions are themselves global formation, exported, shared, and normalized, as we see in the slide. And I ask again, why does the colonized body unsettle the colonizer? Why must colonized land be bulldozed, demolished, as if to clear the settler's mind of the colonized right to return to body, to home, to land? Why all this overkill of the geo-corporality, the geography of Palestine and the corpus of the Palestinian bodies and the shrinking map of Palestine, 48-67 West Bank, Gaza, occupied East Jerusalem? How can we take seriously what Samiras Meir tells us, that the destructible life itself becomes an access point to genocide, and the colonial regime produces their destructibility? By destructible life, Samiras Meir refers to life that law renders available for damage, injury, and elimination, lives whose destruction is not accidental, but legally organized and politically normalized. And can Palestinian ashla becomes a diagnostic? Not to read dismembered remains ashla, but a way to read Zionist state. Is the colonial project in its eyeless of killing and overkill, in clearing villages and camps from Deir Yassin to Tantura, to Sabra and Shatila, to Nserat, in fabricating new times and spaces, ultimately revealing its own stuckness. That is to say, its own intrinsically genocidal core, the imperative to destroy and replace. The colonizer must destroy the sacredness of the body, and what is put in place of the sacred is an inscription of absolute power, a power beyond God for the chosen people in the promised land. In Gaza, as in Tantura, Palestinians centering Ashla and calling it Ashla defies the colonizer and insists on return. It centers the flesh, the body, the land. As Black feminist scholar Spiller explained, that bodies must be reduced to mere flesh. And I quote Hortense Spiller, "I would make a distinction in this case I'm quoting between body and flesh, and impose that distinction as the central one between captive and liberated subject position. In that sense, before the body, there is the flesh, that zero degree of social conceptualization that does not escape concealment under the brush of discourse or the reflexes of iconography." End of quote. So why? Why did they cut him? Im Karim, in an interview with Im Karim, a pregnant woman whose husband died trying to get food and aid for his family in July 2025, it showed the interview, Im Karim sitting on the floor, holding her child in her lap, immersed in horror and incomprehensibility of the pain of losing her husband, seeing him as torn flesh, ashla. Yeah. Scattered body, pieces and blood, she asked with pain, why did they cut him to pieces? Her voice echoed the voices of many Gazans who have seen their loved ones' bodies and flesh cut into ashla, cut into pieces, while in shock, Im Karim hurried to hold and carry Mahmoud, her husband's leg, maybe to assure herself that he was still with her, maybe to show her love to him, to grieve him, or to find a way to save him from such an inhumane death. She, like many Gazans, rushed hysterically and in disbelief to embrace and collect the ashla, the limbs and body parts of their loved ones who's faced atrocious death in such a horrific manner. Im Karim's reaction to horrific scenes of her husband's dismemberment and the severe agony on her face, in her body language, and in her teary voice repeats the reactions and questioning of many Gazans who keep on asking, why did they turn the bodies of our loved ones into ashla? Why did they shoot them, bombard children's schools and patients' hospital? Why did the settler colonial state pour their bombs on our husbands and wives and children, burning them alive? Why did they cut and dismember their bodies? Why in front of our eyes? Palestinian witnessing and voices attest to the systematic abuse of the native's body that, as the genocidal criminality, destruction, wounding, and killing evidence are intrinsically embedded in the Israeli settler colonial economy of genocide. This embodied and enfleshed state violence weaponized the native's dismembered body. And I mean here by the body, the corpus and the geo, the body of the land and the body of the person, a mode of necropenology against the living and dead. But for the colonized, both the dead and dying body are a means of making meaning, a way we comprehend, live, and resist in the global economy, where the consequences of dismemberment are routinized. For Palestinians, their ashla are bound with the social and political collective body. The pieces of body collected, tlamlamu, cared for, carried, bleeding, and dispersed are thus psychosocial and relational artifacts and testimonies speaking the interior story of Palestine to Palestinians, but to the world. A story of body land that speaks against the annihilation directed at them. The presence of dismembered ashla as corporeal, material, and fleshy centers the collectivity and sociality of the geocorpographic entity that goes beyond death to speak about the Palestinian condition, about the story of Palestine. Palestinian Ashleigh speaks to the long history of colonial subjugation and its entanglement with genocidal settler colonial culture. Ashleigh also revealed the complicity of the global colonial economies in neoliberal capitalist culture in many forms of Palestinians' dismemberment, killing, and dying. Thus, dismemberment and dismembered body parts articulate an embodied form of theorization within a matrix of meaning-making and relationalities. To be more specific, Ashleigh and Overkill tell us what the colonial project has always been: to destroy, to displace. It tells us, too, what the colonized must always do: insist on their wholeness, in lemlemi, in gathering, in defying the Ashleigh. So, guided by Gazan's voices and in my own attempt to defy genocidal and hilitary monstrosity, I theorized the politics of Ashleigh and uncovered the relations of the settler colonial imperial genocidal force and deadly racial hierarchy with Ashleigh, the Arabic word for the colonized, scattered, and shredded body parts Palestinians are naming for themselves and the world the violent immensement of genocidal violence in Gaza with an Israeli settler colonial politics of elimination, of evisceration, of erasure. I was inspired by Aboud. Aboud was a bright 15-year-old child whose teacher was killed and turned into Ashleigh, and who was sitting amidst his tent in Gaza's ruin, yet insisting on his humanity, and he decided to write a novel called Ashleigh, and to delve into the importance of his teacher and his loss of his teacher. And I think that to engage with the meaning of Ashleigh and to delve into the power to face that faces Palestinians' settler colonial economy demand that we look at our non-being differently, as the Ashleigh are telling us. With him, with Aboudi, and the acts of defiance of innumerable Gazans, I argue that Ashleigh pushes beyond dismantling the biopolitical and necropolitical domain of racial command by requiring us to read its inscription in the dismembered, wounded, and dying fleshy body of the colonized. What is being written on the body and on the land? A story of the absolute power of the colonizer, a power beyond God, beyond the people. And here I don't want to go into my analysis on the ontotheology, but that's what I mean by that. In doing so, I argue that Ashleigh exposes the greedy appetite of the colonizer that prohibits thinkability of Palestinian, thinkability of Palestine's wholeness, its possibility to be and to constitute itself as a whole entity and sociality, rising above its uprooting and dismemberment. So centering Ashleigh and its lemlemi, its gathering, unsettles the totalizing perception of annihilation by insisting on the sacredness of the flesh, as well as the burial for the dead. Walking among Ashleigh at mass graves in Nasser Medical Complex, Gaza journalist Bissan noted, and I quote, "Looking for organs, heads or skin, you walk a little bit and you see corpses waiting for someone to recognize them." Her words, end of quote, her words and silence stages Ashleigh as calling for recognition, calling to be collected and embraced, calling to be recognized as sight of knowing. Her eyes read the scattered organs as seeking reunification with family, an act of rooting against violence uprooting. Her reflections expose the inscription of state terror upon scattered flesh, a politics that aims to evict the already dead from humanity. Her camera and words function as encounter mapping, insisting on embodied relations amidst Israeli settler colonial state terror. Reading the unknown Ashleigh, which carries multiple stories of loved ones who did not survive the genocide, makes meaning out of the lemlemi, the loving act of collecting and protecting the scattered dead, the remembering the dismembered, starting with Palestinian voices, even as Ashleigh, we begin the almost impossible journey of trying to embrace wounded remains, Ashleigh, as an act of lemlemi, an epistemic and embodied reunification against the ongoing Nakba, a claim on Palestinians' inseparable relationality and righteous wholeness amidst fragmentation. Ashleigh offers us a vital concept for grasping the genocidal brutality of embodied fleshy dismemberment, Centering Ashla as a counter-archive exposes the settler colonial creation of deathscapes and its necrological drive as tool of governance. In Palestine, the many means of controlling the shredded flesh of attempting to destroy and to erase are only instruments in the long series of technologies used by the settler state. Turning the colonized into Ashla as the culmination of the Palestinian racialized erasure unveils the savage encroachment of power that facilitates settler colonial domination by preying on the decomposition of wounded and scattered Palestinian flesh in the face of Ashla that converts living spaces to death zones into spaces of death. Gazans anxiously reiterate and repeat the concept of Ashla, an invocation that unpacks the political work of this brutality. So by understanding how Palestinians make sense of scenes of brutal, corporeal, family, land, and community dismemberment in their everyday lives amidst the genocide, I am offering an anti-colonial theorization from the flesh while digging in the flesh. In taking Ashla as my ontological and teleological point of departure, defying it, enlivening it, insisting on its humanity against a dismembering geopolitical and bodily disposability, I highlight how in identifying the body parts of their loved ones, Palestinians accentuate their Palestinianity, livability, wholeness, and continuity. To speak of Ashla is to speak about Lemlemi, unpack the lethal coloniality of non-being and being, and defy the intrinsic built-in machinery of colonial dismemberment. Let me go to my second point, which is on overkill. Through this calculated combination of Ashla and invasive bioaffective violence, colonial power enacts a regime that tears through the psychosocial bond among the colonized, producing a sustained state of what I call overkill. And why am I using overkill? I use overkill because it represents the racial order of power and the domination and sovereignty of the state of Israel from a global political perspective and what is happening on ground. Overkill to me functions not simply as an excessive brutality, but as a settler colonial formation that organizes death as a totalizing condition of life. It is brutally designed to permanently uproot, eviscerate, and dismember the social framework, the skeleton that holds the psychic, physical, and social home life of the colonized, shaping the wholeness of the Palestinian national body, sociality, land, and life. Staged unapologetically by the Israeli official and educators, religious leader, and civilians calling for example, the word ktisha, pounding, or mechika, erasure of Gaza, overkill commits to the complete non-humanity of the colonized in order to preserve the colonizers' securitized and sacralized state, as I say in my work. It demands not just bodily death, but the erasure of memory, the destruction of social words, the dismantling of systems of cultural meaning, and the foreclosure of any political or existential horizon in which the colonized might reassemble, endure, or imagine a future. So overkill seeks to vaporize the material as the bodies are vaporizing. Spatial, affective, and epistemic infrastructure that sustains life, ensuring that even in perishing, the colonized remain fragmented, ungrievability, and unremembered. Yeah. Organized around the logic of intensifying pain and horror, overkill tests the limits of the modern world's imagination and politics by offering many kinds of death by dismemberment. It produces a geocorporeal political economy and psychosocial Ashla to reach the final solution, the total elimination. Aimed at destroying the plurality and relationality of the colonized world, settler colonial overkill energized its annihilatory logic to achieve its own perfect foundation and futurity. So the power of Ashla, of blood, of bullets, dismembered body parts, death and dying, is inscribed in the genocidal economy that register a geocorporeal, affective, and sociopolitical, visceral social agony to ensure the liquidation of the Palestinian body, life, land, and collective. In this sense, overkill is a colonial necroeconomy. As a colonial technology, overkill operates through the systematic evisceration of the colonized sociopolitical body, its cohesion in the interdependence and capacity for regeneration. It subjects population to continuous and routinized death, rendering human life, family, and community continuity not sacred but instrumental. Life itself becomes capital. Body and flesh becomes capital, extracted, weaponized, and circulated as both power and commodity. In this regime, the destruction of life and infrastructure is not collateral damage. It's not collateral damage, but constitutive. Overkill transforms life itself into a currency of colonial power that is tested, displayed, and sold to produce further capital for the settler state and its global enablers. So overkill as capital annihilate people, land destroyed beyond measures that the raw material for making the settler and the settler state. So to destroy a people and replace it with the reign of man, to inscribe on bodies and on land this absolute power, a colonial monstrosity imagined by the colonized as securing the death of the colonized, that stretches our understanding of the origin of capitalist social relation. As a fascist capital, overkill erases sociality of collective societies to assemble gendered and racialized hierarchy of conquest, domination, generating social and geocorporal condition for further violence. We should bear in mind that overkill is a psychic necessity also. Without it, colonial anxiety becomes unbearable. This is why hospitals must be turned into mass graves, and mass graves must be bulldozed. There can be no longer expressions of either of the colonial power or colonial anxiety that the bulldozer better even than the bombs that rains down from for what a bulldozer accomplishes. As Shireen Razak reminds us, while relying on René Bourglad's national uncanny, the settler must return again and again to the defiled grave, engaging in a regular process of desecration, if the settler is to know themselves as triumphant and legitimate. The dead cannot be left alone, lest their sacredness persist. So overkill positions the colonized as expendable, as Fanon stressed. Colonial violence disciplines physically and violates psychologically. Here, the mere ashlaa become sites of management, where shattered bodies are not only remnant, but objects of governance, as Jusper Poir notes, in relation to injury, debility, and maiming. Not always through killing, I argue precisely through the overkill and its logic of evisceration, if I use Delin Rodriguez's analysis. Such practices sustain a political economy of dispossession, producing the capital of non-recognizability of the ontological non-being. Yeah? So land, body, sociality, dismembered is a geosocio-corpographia. So what kind of cartography is needed when even the forensics are being smashed? I engage with the horror of overkill both ontologically and teleologically in order to name family member. Family members lost bones and flesh, unfound, dead, fissured, never born, and bodies, entities in pain. And I, in my work, talk about overkilling the undead and the unborn, and I don't need to remind you of the babies that decomposed in their incubators. Overkilling the almost dead, where, for example, in May 2025, the Zionist lawmaker Tzvi Sukot asserted in an interview on Channel 12 that who remembers, everyone has already gotten used to the fact that we can kill 100 Gazans in one night during a war, yeah, and no one cares. This is what he said. And Sukot boost suggests that the necropolitical annihilation of overkill also manifests in overkilling the starving. Who cares? An ontological and epistemological fetishization of the racialized subject that turns them into a human capital in the hands of the colonial state and their further killability. So overkill also drives the economic and imperial exaltation of violence, as you know, in the program of AI system, including the gospel or Where is Daddy, a system that designed to hit families and to overkill them. Thus, a person is no longer affiliated with Hamas is considered fair game. As Gray reports in an IOF doesn't claim to be surgical in their operation, rather, one operator described them as mass assassination factory and that values quantity, not quality. So the horror of overkill are further apparent during the Israeli strikes on Gaza school. And you know the story of Madrasat al-Tab'een. And according to a UNICEF report, every day in Gaza, 28 children are killed. And as Iyad, my friend, told me, yeah, doctora, can you believe it? This is a classroom of children every day. A classroom of children. So when I talk an overkill, I also talk about the overkill of the already dead, sharing the story and watching Israeli tanks run over her husband, Raja, shared the way the genocidal system operated. Not only do bombs smash and clear landscape, they also dismember the about to die and the already dead. Raja's voice shed the lights on the system in which turning people into ashla is not enough, it seems. In this system, a mother must watch her family, this is what happened to Raja, smashed to death, and then, you know, the dead must be killed before, during, and after they are dead. A tank must smash the bodies of the family of children into the sand, flattening and disintegrating flesh beyond recognition as body, land, and sociality. This compulsion to overkill executes a family by driving a military tank over the already dying bodies of Raja's husband and children, her own body, so no forensics are able to reach, and no criminal investigation will seek to collect evidence. So no forensics, and this I want you to remember when we're talking about overkill. So repeatedly smashing the dead bodies, the back and forth of the tank over their bodies erases them structurally, skeletally, and socially, even from the sand. So, and that's what we've seen also in Mawasi, Ghazi, the IOF declared a humanitarian zone, and then in Haaretz article, George Petropoulos stated, and I quote, "There are people who simply vaporized. 10 or 20 people who were known to be in the tent have simply vanished. I was at the hospital after the bombing. It looks like a slaughterhouse. Blood everywhere. It looks like Nagasaki." End of quote. So overkill is performative, excessive, injurious, and redundant violence. Such overkill apparent in the racialized killing and brutalizing access of aggression, as Sadia Hartman knows, send a clear corpo-political message that the lost bodies of Raja's family, as the body of the historic Palestine, the vaporized, missing from refugee, the graves missing, never dug or removed, do not, never will, never should count. Overkill is there to tell us nothing will be left of Palestine, not even the rubbles, not even the ashla of Palestinians. All evidence of Palestinian individuals, of Palestinian sociality and Palestinian society will be removed, will be eradicated, and what would be left in place is nothing but monstrosity. But here I really want to end with Mahmoud Darwish, where he really insists that our ashla, our name.
أشلاؤنا أسماؤنا لا لا مفر سقط القناع عن القناع سقط القناع لا إخوة لك يا أخي لا أصدقاء يا صديقي لا خلاع لا الماء عندك لا الدواء ولا السماء ولا الدماء ولا الشراع ولا الأمام ولا الوراء حاصر حصارك لا مفر سقطت ذراعك فالتقطها واضرب عدوك لا مفر.
Ashla and overkill are my analytics, where I would like really to insist that the plan, if we do not act, if we do not stop, if we as a global community do not nlemlem collect, nothing will be left of Palestine, not even the rubbles, not even the ashla of Palestinians, not even the forensics. So I hope that you'll hear me, but you will act forward to prevent the continuation of the production of ashla and overkill. Thank you.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.